Mä saan aloittaa.
Joo.
No niin. All right. Welcome to this keynote part of the second day. I promise to talk about you during the next an hour. Well, I will not talk about the whole hour, but I'll leave some time for the discussion too. But during the next hour, talk about the theme which I entitled something like the end of the liberal internationalism and the revival on the liberal West, a new struggle within the West and its implication to the rest. Quite challenging topic, and I was very glad that you kind of invite me to here and force me to rethink about this West issue in new context and in the framework what has happened during the last year in global politics. And yeah, I think I found it for myself a lot of nuances. Some elements of my former studies found it a new place, and then I found a lot of new open questions. So we can discuss about this. So, and another thing is, I've been a little bit surprising that how quickly the narratives of the West are changing. Also, it's just 2010 we published this with the Christopher Browning book of The Struggle for the West, where Alistair also was writing and contributing on this book. And then we will talk about very much about how the European and American West was dividing, and there was a kind of struggling between these two different poles of the West. But now I think the struggle within the West is concerning the liberal and anti-liberal West, and then we are entering a new phase. Now that's, I'm going to be a little bit open up from various perspectives. We're used to that I think that that's been kind of a normal way of defining the West, that we're putting the liberal internationalism, liberal humanitarian interventionism, modernity, all with equal marks with the West. That is all this kind of a meaning the same thing. But is it so? And can we challenge all these elements and still have the West? That's a question. And I think at least when you following the written narratives, that is very much the case, that the West is used in that sense, that all these elements are in one way or another is challenged or contested. And that's how we'll look about. They are still all kind of contested from two different angles. The one is, which I'm more interested in this presentation, is rise of anti-liberal or kind of a conservative power political West, which is quite interesting. But it's, of course, this liberal West is very much a challenge and contested also from different kind of anti-colonial, anti-global perspectives, which, on the other hand, surprisingly coming rather close in some parts of this kind of anti-liberal West, of this conservative West, and that's how I will end it up, how they are finding each other in some surprising way. Well, that's perhaps a more side path. So are we living a current paradigm shift in Western narrative or not? That's a little odd. First, it's good to define what I'm meaning by the West. We have learned it during these 2 days that the West is slippery concepts. It's escaped all possible definitions, and everyone uses it a little bit different way. This is how do you understand it? Can you see it from there? Yeah. I'm not allowed to move too much. Yeah. Yeah, because of the camera. Yeah. This is why I'm seeing the West. This is kind of an important anchorage of identity. But of course, it doesn't have an agency. It's not a unit as such. But it's a kind of a identity narrative, or I would say civilizational identity narrative. It's uniforming discourse, which combining the seven nations are staged together and then say and kind of make it the other kind of a heterogeneity disappearing through this kind of a narrative. It's how it's important is also in global perspective is a narrative which is legitimizing the superiority in international, in global politics. It's created the hierarchies in the international order. And the West is seen as a superior on the others. How it's seen, it's different things.
In that sense, the West is norm, ideology, and practice of ordering, managing, and envisioning the global order. But it's always a contingent and resilient and escape all the definitions. The one thing is to keep in mind how the relationship between the West and the modernity and the rise of a kind of a civilizational thinking, which appeared a little bit earlier than the term West appeared in vocabulary or the Western thinking. That we're learning yesterday that in the first book about the where the term the Western civilization was mentioned, was published in England just 1906 or something like that, you mentioned, yeah. Well, if you think about the West is close to that modernity and civilizational thinking without that even the term was not used, we go back and in late 18th century, early time of Enlightenment, and that's a time when the civilizational ideas were emerged. And since that, we have had these two things, and we have a civilization in singular. An idea that there's a one civilization is have and the responsibilities and power over the others. It's modernizing, it's a civilizing the others. It's a both way. It's a capable, a legitimized position, but it's capable responsibilities, and that's advocated a lot of different expressions during the past 200 years. But we have had all the time at the same time the idea that civilizations in plural, that there are several civilizations. This emerged perhaps in idea that in history there are several, but this is coexist these two things, and this important divisions. Are we seeing that there's one modern civilization, or is there plural civilization in plural? And that's I think this is mattering quite a lot when you're looking about the current also the change of a narrative of the West, and I will return to that. Quickly, for the starting point, I'll return all these elements in a little bit later, but the showing when I'm quickly looking about the current different kind of narratives of the West existing, there might be many others. This is kind of a little bit quick collection of the potential narratives. I can make this kind of a quick divisions between different kind of narratives. On the other hand, we have this clearly a liberal narrative, liberal embassy, liberal interventionism, liberal internationalism, based on an idea of a Western modernity, seeing very much a kind of a civilization in singular form. We have a classical modernizing West expressing in quite a lot of peace building, state building kind of a discourses, democratic peace discourses, humanitarian intervention, all that have been us with the last 25 years. We have again returning heroic West, this kind of a living Cold War way of but not exactly, and new dichotomies. And then the question about this has been very much a kind of a criticized from post-liberal, post-liberal perspectives. Is it belonging to this or this going on that? That is the question I will return. But we have had, since also in the 90s, for 20 years, so this kind of another narrative, which is seeing more the civilization blura, seeing that this and challenging this lot of this to be somehow anti-modern or anti-liberal form of kind of a narrative. We have, of course, the famous Huntington's class of civilization, where the civilization are almost eternal entities and they are just a battling. But this has remained there in many, many sense and be used and reused within the West and those who are outside it. I needed that those and in ISIS or other Islamist terrorists, they really needed West. They are not. They couldn't really find a kind of a rationale why they exist without the West. So they created the West also. What I have been interested in about very much in recent years has been declining the crisis of West narratives. Some earlier roots, but it has been returning during the last 10, 15 years, and I will return that in the end of that. And I think this is important element of this larger story. But then I wanted to connect this with the latest events of Mr. Trump, the Brexit, and the flow of refugees, whether into Finland or into the Europe or into the States, and so on, and how this all is connected with the West. For the practical reasons, I will concentrate it more on this man. Well, but all in many ways are linked together. And I'm starting with the two perspectives. First, looking how I've seen by different participants, supporters, and observers what these things have to do with the West. How the term West is used to give a meanings and significance for Trump and his policies. I'm not going in Brexit as such. This is a quick overview. I think that in certain groups, very much a kind of a and tackle the Trump into the idea of the Western civilization, or in practice, a decline of a Western civilization. And then I quickly look one speech Donald Trump gave it about his foreign policy in that is already in April, but I think it gives some idea what he's thinking about. He may say it, he may come in another things, but I think it's we have something to look out his earlier ideas about the West. There we started. So first about the supporters, and then where I found it, the idea of the West existing in and that's you can do it quickly. If you go in Google and putting the West Trump and so on, you get it a lot of results in that way. And I think almost all have the same kind of a messages. What we have it here, the same ideas popping out. This idea of that we are living in the traumatic moment of the Western civilization, and it's a question of a survival of Western civilization. We are in the end. We are close. And we have lost the proudness of what we are, and we have to recover that. We are a more successful culture in history, and it's a kind of a important. And I think it's a better. Oh yeah. I have one to make it the point much more clear when you're listening to this. Yes.
The West is not a full-on banana republic yet, but we are close. In America, I'm going to use the we. I'm not an American, but we are all in this together. Trust me, we are right on the border. America is not a full-on banana republic yet, but it is only one election away from becoming one. One election away. May sound catastrophic, but let's look at it this way. You're going to get millions of more people coming in from the third world. You are going to get the legalization of tens of millions of illegal immigrants. And look at the countries they're coming from. You know, when you bring the third world to the first world, you don't get the first world. You get the third world. Until we can figure that out, how to transfer Western values to the third world, you're going to get the banana republic if the left gets in, if the Dems get in this election. We are very, very close to losing it all. The entire Western experiment to losing it all. And this is why I'm working so hard. This is why I'm doing two or three or more shows a day. And this is why I'm...
I think you get the point. Quite clear. I think, yeah. Of course, the using of these at the moment is perhaps not so critical analysis. I'm not so much interested about all these sources. Are they real? How they kind of fake? This is real, Kai. This is Stefan Molyneux, have this kind of his own flock. He's defined as an anarcho-capitalist, which is against the state as such, and but seemingly quite right in his opinions. But the whole media, when you go in this kind of internet media kind of sources, you can get the same messages in various ways, that the Western civilization is on kind of edge. That this we are in living in this kind of a clash of civilization area. In practice, that kind of a battle taking place within, not somewhere outside. There's also those who then go and step on that. It's not only within America or within Europe that the battle is going on, also in the Middle East that is also there, but it's much more dangerous when they're coming in and then destroying us ourselves from within. Well, the story probably sells because it's repeated so many times, not for all, but some elements of that. And it's also connected with this kind of idea. We need to be proud of our greatness. And we are lost. We have to recover this lost dignity. We are not anymore. Certainly, it is a question of a trauma, giving them a trauma, kind of meaning these kind of things, give a meaningfulness, significance. It's better to kind of associate the ideas of this kind of a traumatic moment. There's a significance for what I'm doing. What I'm capable of about, it's changing the world. It's much more meaningful. It's interesting. But then, jumping to the Mr. Trump. I'm not saying that this rhetoric, which his supporters have, it's the same thing that is going to find it from Trump. But let's see. We will see it in the next coming months or half year, what's going to be practical policies. There will be another practical solutions. I'm quite convinced on that. But perhaps these early speeches are telling a little about the kind of a backbone he's thinking about. What are the fundamental issues in global politics? Who are friends? Who are and then you make the practical solutions later on. Or maybe he's changing his ideas altogether when someone else telling something another element about the global politics. We don't know. But here, in many sense, I think it's quite interesting how the in Trump is making division between enemies, rivals, allies. What are the kind of a dynamics of global politics and how the West is coming up into the picture? The one thing is clear in this here, that the enemy is clearly a radical Islam. It's ISIS. We are in a war against radicalism, and Clinton cannot say that. It's war. It's classy. It's highly important. And it's not just a kind of, it's a philosophical struggle, like our long struggle in the Cold War. So it's really coming close to that Huntingtonian class of civilization thinking about. And it's also a struggle taking place on our homeland. So clearly connection with we earlier seen. And this is quite dreadful in my opinion, that he makes that this is not only battling in somewhere else, but we are having this clash of civilization within America also. Then rivalry. What about Russia and China? And we decide to live peacefully and friendship with Russia and China. It's non-contrasting, no kind of controversy, no kind of making enemies. And wanting to improve all that, and also with China. Of course, it's the only way that we are powerful because they are not respecting us anymore as much. We need to be powerful. They have to respect us. But still, they are almost on the same side. And then the closest is certainly Israel and NATO allies. Different dimensions. And they are called in this speech is also that what kind of combined them is the Western values. So the West come in the picture and is there in this way. Then what about the whole picture, the West and the rest? And here's come the connection with these ideas of the Western civilization, modernization, and one or liberal intervention is, and so on. The first is the most interesting, that there is no universal values, and we make a lot of a mistake. The America, the promoting the democracy and democratic center, taking that as a granted, and doing that through the military interventions. We should not do that. The democracy is our things, doesn't fit to others. That comes quite close to the post-liberal critical of liberal interventionism in practice, so it's not very far away from that at all. But there is a new kind of a it takes away the points from liberal interventionism because there is no universal values, and all things which would matter in global order is the power. The world is most peaceful and most prosperous when America is the strongest. We must America respect again. So previously say that. The world would be most peaceful when the democracy is spreading all around, the countries become democracies. That was still George Bush saying. Now we say that we have to just be strong, then everything is peaceful. So, yeah, this is quite anti-liberal interventionism against liberal internationalism and denying that this kind of idea of a classical modernity that others have there's a promise that they could become like us. It says that no, it's not possible. Quickly, before going to the next step, which is the analysis part of this, I'm not connecting to any of all these liberal comments or these Trump, but just a couple points. Unfortunately, this is only from the local Finnish paper. But there's one part of these who are making the comments that's trying to support the liberalism, liberal democracy, that this is now in a crisis and we are entering age of autocapitalism. But take this as a liberal international order as a kind of unproblematic, uncritical term, and say that now that is the term that we have living in this kind of world where everything has been nice and freedom has been celebrated and so on. But then there's been all these a little bit more confusing things which come from the Washington Post that, yes, we have criticized all that. We have criticized that the democracy doesn't fit to everyone in at least born. But he's not doing the right way of criticizing that. And then he's pointing out why he's not doing the right way. It's in that way that he talked about, the Trump is talking about, a culture war or clash of civilization, that the criticism is right, but the conclusion are wrong. So that is exciting a certain kind of confusion among those who have been criticizing the liberal interventionism earlier. Quickly, at least from my reading, when I'm looking at all this kind of a text, I could find a lot of dichotomies. I know that dichotomies are easy things to bind up and agree also. On the other hand, that the reality is not as simple as clear-cut. That when you open up all these dichotomies, it's seeming that they are much more blurring and more confusing than they look here. But seemingly we could have a kind of liberal democracy against the authoritarian capitalism, liberal interventionism against the power political rationale, liberal internationalism against the national exclusion of selfishness, Western modernity and multiple modernities, dialogue of civilization versus class of civilizations. All these things looks that we have this kind of a dichotomies, or do we? Are we returning the same things that we're calling back in 25 years and in 90s when we have a two kind of a rising ideas, the Fukuyama's idea of end of history, that the liberal kind of a model, liberal democracy is the end of history, is the final point, and then the Huntington's class of civilization idea, which seemingly, when you look about this, is returning in strong way on all these. And now the kind of a schwit, the winning part looks to be the class idea. But I think we needed a little bit more kind of a detailed way of these post-narratives, liberal interventionism, and these arising anti-West narratives, and then come under some conclusions. Or at least we could have some open questions. I think perhaps the conclusion is too much to say at the moment. But you could in my opinion, a little bit repeat what I'm meaning by liberal interventionism, or I would hear liberal militarism, which emerged in 1990s. It was a really this is how some Marx put it, very teleological concept of history, that the history of some kind of a destination. And the telos, the ending point, is a liberal democracy. It's based on the belief that the West, we, have essentially reached this end point of a liberal democracy in comparison to the non-liberal others, and they have yet to progress. But we have the model, and we can guide them. And over in the sense of kind of strong optimism, confidence, about the democracy's presence and future, and all this was connected. This was a kind of a catching the moment in 90s. And then was a lot of a discussion, I think, that which at this point of moment sounds a little bit absurd, that the problem for the West is just will disappear. The problem is what is the West anymore when everyone become a Western? Everyone become modern, liberal, and Western. So then the West is losing its more kind of a point, because it is not only particular but universal. I think this has disappeared, but it's good to remember. And all this thinking which created of this idea of liberal interventionism, well, we have a liberal interventionism in the 19th century already, so it's not a new thing as such. We have certainly, but this all idea about this humanitarian intervention, we have a responsibility to stop the violence. We have a kind of responsibility to make a military intervention to end the violent act in different parts of the world. It sounds quite nice, and I agree in certain parts, but it ended a huge problem with the situations. And who are defining the rules and who are defining the norms on that. It's ended about a very large-scale peace-building kind of industry, while the international community, in practice the West, is ended about the building up a fragile, collapsed state all around the world and setting the norms how what the peace should look like. And this common idea of a liberal peace, that the peace always needed democracy, human rights, the respect of human rights and market economy, at least in a certain way. And all this ended about very much a kind of a situation which can be looked about from a classical standard of civilization point of view, from the 19th century perspectives, but I also have a kind of idea that we have a responsibility to look out the other more kind of a barbarian parts of the world, and take care of them, because we have we know the things are the better. So is that we want to keep on that world? That's been perhaps the questions. And is that the liberal West, which those who criticized the Trump wanted to kind of protect and to keep it? Quickly, a couple slides about the liberal interventionism and its expressions. This is just a showing out that even probably some of have compared the Trump with the George Bush in earlier, that Bush was clearly kind of sending the liberal interventionism. And this is his statement about during the close to the Iraq war and so on, that this says that all things have been, the peace will be bring through the democracy, and there's one way of and we should spread the democracy in all possible ways, including a military, and that would bring the global peace. And if you look about the democratic peace is a good example of opening up this liberal interventionism and show the problem with the issue as such. It's quite nice to say that democracy is a good thing, it's a nice thing. And also to point out that, yes, democratic countries are more peaceful. They probably are. You can make a kind of empirical study of that. But I don't believe as much of democratic peace theory as such that you can make a kind of a natural law that democracy never go war against each other. That I don't believe. It might be so at the moment, but it might be not in true. Democracies are changing. The times are changing. But this showing that the good things like a human rights, democracy, ended about the kind of a quite problematic situation when they're linked with this kind of a liberal internationalism. It's a story that I think the democratic peace theory as a theory started the discussion in 1980s and 1990s. This was an idea that democracy doesn't go war against each other. And that it's very modernistic, very liberal kind of abstention, and trust on this kind of a very kind of a future oriented in that sense, and in that way very very modern. And quickly in the 90s or early 2000s, this idea of democratic peace theory was adopted in foreign policy agendas in the US and in the European Union. Especially in Clinton's era, this kind of democracy promotion became part of their policies. And you saw it that it was followed during the Bush regime, but in a new way, it's more aggressive way when it's connected with Iraq and Afghanistan. But it's very much a part of the European Union policies also. But they say that the problem is that it's who can define the democracy. Democracy is, there's not one way of defining it. It's very kind of a, it's contingent term and always in changing. And you can legitimize the war through this democratization theory or these kind of things. And it's created again a dichotomy between us and them, West and non-West, the democracies and non-democracies. And it's so, is it so bad that Trump says that democracy is not always desirable, that it's not universal or something like that? Yeah. Another issue which about the liberal kind of a theories in recent years happening, and this is an interesting story that this kind of a little bit classical political West was returning some 10 years ago when Robert Kagan published this Return of History and End of the Dreams books. It's still within liberal intervention term, but then he makes a dichotomy between authoritarian capitalist and liberal democracy. So this is a new battlefield struggle in the world. And I think the point was there that so far the idea was that the rest of the world have to buy the whole packages. They have to buy the democracy, the human rights, market economy, everything is belong to the same packages. And when the China and Russia just take one part of that, the capitalism, this was not seen as a threat. They stole our modernity. They didn't take us as we wanted. And this ended up with kind of a lot of discussion and slowly coming up this kind of idea that this is a kind of a battlefield in we are returning to this kind of a new Cold War situation. And I think this have resonated quite a lot in here in Finland, in Baltic States, in Poland, in an area kind of close to the Russia in recent years after the Ukrainian crisis, that this is a real battlefield, a real struggle in the world at the moment, that we are returning on this kind of battle. But have you noticed, this was not existing in Trump's speech at all, completely non-existing there, which is also quite interesting. And the last thing about liberal West before, going to the anti-liberal West, is that the kind of a critique of a liberal kind of West? There's been huge critique of that, critique on humanitarianism, critique on humanitarian interventions, critique on international peace, critique on globalization from various post-liberal, post-global, post-colonial, feminist perspective, all these kind of possible angles. Has been heavily criticized. The criticism of ultra liberal intervention became a norm, at least in many or kind of a scholarly field, for example, and its influence also in practitioners' levels and so on. And it's clearly all this coming out this point that this is creating a kind of a new standard of civilization, dividing the world to us and them, and it's all nice things are still based on this kind of divisions of the world. Then the question is, and I don't have time to answer that, but what then? What is the alternative? If we are criticizing liberal intervention, I think we have two lines on here. We have a post-liberal kind of emancipatory kind of attitude. We are looking at new options. I've been interested about these local peace formation, popular peace theories. I'm looking, what then if the liberal peace is not valid? What kind of other models of peace we would have it? But this picture I received from Johanna last night that we discussed, and I asked her to send it for me. Unfortunately, she cannot be today here. But we talk about this, is this radical enough for this radical critique? And those, what I find it the kind of interesting that the most radical, and Johanna mentioned about, I didn't know that earlier, about the third generation feminist in the States, was so critical towards Clinton because she represented the kind of liberal interventionism that they think that Trump is much better. And this is the kind of one of the example that this is the liberal, the critic is not the Trumpians kind of rhetoric, but in the end, Trump is better because he's not a liberal interventionist for these really radical, critical kind of thinkers. Okay, the last 10 minutes I call back and look about the two main elements of this anti-liberal West at the moment. I think in the end, I would make a big difference between anti-liberal West and this kind of a post liberal West. And I think this is because of the background is different. And in many ways, this kind of a Huntingtonian idea of a clashing civilization in plural is a core of this kind of a new anti-liberal West, but not necessarily in the forms of a class. So the question is there needed to class, or is this a rivalry between civilization? But all of are returning the idea of a plurality of a civilization, not a singular form. The question is have it to be a class, or can it be another forms of rivalry between civilizations? And there, I think I have found it at least two lines on that, probably it's much more blur of these questions. So also a change, although this is referring that yes, this kind of civilization thing have remained with us all the time, because even the foreign policy thinking have been during the past 20 years been referred to this kind of a civilizational thinking that U.S. have this specific policy towards Islamic countries. It's very much based on that they have believe that there is a civilization and Islam is one civilization. The one thing which is different is that for a long time, the word we just use, we aim in the dialogue. And the question is now kind of trying to replace more with is this idea still remaining there? But it's easy to return all these kind of things because it has been there all the time, even during these strong years of liberal interventionism. So the two elements coming to end. The first thing which has been recently studied, and that is those who can read the Finnish. It's in the article and here and in this book. Unfortunately, it's only in Finnish. It would have been studied, I find it very interesting, is the rise of a new kind of a crisis of the West, or decline of the West, or doom of the West narratives, which are not connected with that earlier pointing about this kind of the refugees and incoming others in the country, but are more talking about in broader global sense that the West is losing the game, mainly because we are overspending, we are over-indebted, we are stagnating, we are not anymore vital. We are losing this kind of a power to be innovative. And we are not proud of what we are. We are not proud of our achievements. We are not proud of our history. We have lost our dignity. And this kind of a, it is more or less a kind of a narratives linked with the rise of Asia. Rise of China and whole Asia in this. You can find it, there's examples of historian Niall Ferguson, more social scientist Martin Jacques, friends Pascal Bruckner, Charles Gibson, more perhaps economist Tambisa Moya. You can find a lot of these. It has resonated with also with the larger political and especially neoliberal economic discussion kind of things. The West have lost the game in economics and the Asia taking the leading part. Quite a lot. This is quite dramatical stories, but all them started that how we were great. Because if you're losing something, we have to be great. And in practice, they're saying in that sense that it's not deterministic in that sense. The end of the kind of always, the message is that we can do still them. If it makes drastic change, we can save the West. If it, and then what we do is different things, but this has been that we needed to turn the back and basics. We need to be proud of that. The core things in this theory has been this kind of a contested modernity or plural, multiple modernities, which, and that's why I call this kind of anti-liberal or anti-modern. Because usually it's that the West owns the modernity. We are the leading the way to the others. But this is kind of the new conservative narratives is pointing out that yes, the culture matters, so that even the others are become modern. They become modern in different ways because the modernity and culture merges and they remain different. They're not becoming like us. And perhaps we don't have any more the model to show them how become prosperous as we used to have. I think there are a lot of loans from the Schwarz Eisenstein theory of multiple modernities, which is quite interesting. But this is the thing that we are losing that. We cannot show other way anymore how we became rich, how they became a kind of a successful. We have this is classical thing from Henry Kissinger. But this is the idea that's how we became the West legitimized and became relevant, a legitimized position and became relevant in the world if it's not kind of show the way, it's not the model. And that's it coming to the idea that all this point out the kind of a multiple modernities, that we don't care about the others, we just wanted to be, we're competing with them, but we want to do the best still, we want to be great, but we don't think about the others should be become like us. And this is, I think I found it quite a lot in from the Trump speeches that we have to be respected, be great, but we don't care what others think about us. And the last, before the conclusion part, conclusion slide, is then, when these things, this kind of idea that we are living on some kind of end of a kind of West, or that liberal the West is kind of a challenge and we're losing the game a little bit and we needed to do something. If that is linked with this kind of a class of a civilization idea, and especially it's linked with that this clash is not taking only place somewhere and outside of our own country, but also within our country, then we have a very explosive political ideology. And that is come when what the populist or far rights have it. They created this kind of a dystopia and the combining of this element. There's a decline, there's a crisis of the West, we're living in but it's the battle is taking place also within our countries. It's connected with this kind of also the idea that the decline is not only economic, it's aging, it's a decline in the population, and in particular it's coming that these others are coming in, immigrants, refugees, and they will not integrate with us. We are losing everything. Eurasia, you know that idea from the British point of view that, or then from the European point of view that the Europe changed to become an Arabic country in the end. This is very sorrowful. And this is, in my opinion, more dreadful than this other anti-conservative West, because this is very much a legitimizing violence. You're living in extraordinary times. The violence is needed. Violence is legitimized. And this is always a kind of important the point of view when we come in the political systems on political ideology, which legitimize, seeing the violence as a legitimate way of acting. And that's in domestic or international sphere. And in concluding all this, I don't know how to put in all these things together, lot of elements, and I think that would be not really one clear answer. So things, there's plurality of narratives, plurality of stories. What I'm trying to perhaps point out that there are surprising differences, and a lot of differences, but also some surprising similarities between two contesting narrative, contesting way of challenging the liberal West or liberal internationalist West. And this rising conservative anti-liberal of the West have certain similar elements on this post-liberal liberal West. But on the other hand, from a fundamental point of view, I think they are different in that sense. But a little bit different, and I'm sure it's something which I would like to think about more, and how much of this group in the end ended about the supporting of this kind of a, it would be interesting, very interesting to ask. But still, it's quite obvious that the West is again in need very much to imagine global order. It remains blurred and slippery. But it is really much this classical liberal West we are used to that. It is contested from various directions and it is in crisis. It has been and now probably much more than it has been. What I'm interesting and a little bit scaring about looking for the future year when you have a Trump, as if you turn to Trump, is that the question of legitimizing other violence. So if you don't have this kind of a liberal interventions where the kind of actions, foreign action interventions, peaceful or more military interventions are legitimized, at least in rhetorical way, for referring to human rights, to democracy, or something issue which we've seen quite nice and supported, if that doesn't matter anymore, so then how the use of violence is then legitimized? Because I unfortunately believe that the violence and force is still used in global politics. So what is instead? It's just returning of the really power political things. So and what is perhaps we are looking for some traumatic paradigmatic shift on these terms. But let's see. We are more wise perhaps in 1 year when seeing how things coming. But yeah, this is more or less what I for the beginning to say. Thank you.